Hi everyone, welcome to our podcast series, What About Us? Cultural Awareness in Clinical Psychology. You're joined here today by Afsana. In this episode, I talked to Saika Naz, who's a CBT therapist, a trainee clinical psychologist, and the chair of BABCP's Equality and Culture Special Interest Group. Saika talks a bit about the development of the IAPT BME Positive Practice Guide, and she also gives a personal account of her journey through the profession, which includes experiences of discrimination and structural inequalities. She also talks a little bit about what makes good supervision. So let's have a listen to what Saika had to say. Hi Saika, thank you so much for joining me today. So before we start, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Hi Fana, thank you for inviting me. Yes, my name is Saika Naz. I'm a cognitive behaviour therapist. Mm-hmm. I currently work in Sheffield Specialist Psychotherapy Service.
Okay.
And I'm also the Trust BME Mentoring Lead. And the other role I have is that I'm the chair of the British Association for Behavioural and Cognitive Psychotherapy, Equality and Culture Group. That's just a voluntary role that I do outside of work.
Right, okay. So tell me a little bit about then, because I know you've done a lot of work around BME groups. So what sort of got your interest in doing this kind of work?
I think when I first came into the NHS as a full-time worker, I came as a bilingual worker, so I was placed in surgeries where there was a high BME population.
Mm-hmm.
So but kind of just working in those communities, coming across a lot of barriers and challenges, and then coupled with some discrimination, basically, in the NHS, has got me interested in this work.
Right, okay.
So that's disadvantaged communities, and it still continues to disadvantage communities, and it's not really spoken about so much. Yeah.
So if I can just touch on that then. So you mentioned discrimination. Is that discrimination... In what respect?
First, it's discrimination towards communities themselves,
right,
and towards therapists.
Mm.
So some of the things that I've encountered, obviously, especially with my role at BABCP, is that a lot of our therapists are being discriminated against and being denied opportunities to develop their clinical skills, or being denied opportunities to develop into leadership positions. And there's some nepotism going on in services.
Right.
There is some of that going on. But in terms of the community, for example, we're often told that it's stigma that prevents people from seeking help.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh no, they don't have a word for depression in their language.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the conversation seems to end. And the blame is then laid, with the community.
Right.
And what the psychological professions are not very good at doing is thinking about, well, where's our role in this? How can we work with the community?
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of co-producing materials or workshops or anything like that, it's just not been happening.
Right, okay. First of all,
little of it, yeah. Sorry.
No, sorry, I was going to say, I'm sorry to hear about your experience of discrimination within, the workplace. And, I can only imagine how difficult that must have been for you. And obviously also for the community that you're talking about. And is this something that you've kind of come across with service users as well? We've talked about these sort of things.
Yeah. So, I'll give you an example of, working in a previous service elsewhere. We were meant to go in and do like an outreach event, and on the back of that do mini screening assessments, and then offer intervention to those people who are struggling with their mood.
Okay.
And when it came down to offering the intervention, we weren't released. Actually, my emails were being ignored, and we were unable to deliver the intervention to that particular group. And that's something that stays with me. So as difficult as this inclusion work is and challenging, it does use a lot of my energy. I think about those group of women that were potentially denied treatment. I think they received something, but a few months later, a complaint was put in.
Right.
It should never have gone that far.
Right.
So that was one example, and there's just no accountability for that.
Right.
And then on the other side, what we've got is myself, when I'm in the community doing community outreach work, which I've done a lot of, I'll signpost people to services, and then I get to hear the feedback, and they don't want to access those services.
Right. Okay.
They're not being sensitive towards their needs.
So could you explain that a little bit more then? Because I think that's really interesting that you've mentioned access concerns, and I think this is something that I've heard that is very common amongst BME groups, particularly. So could you explain what are some of the sort of issues that came about or have come about in your experience?
In terms of just accessing services.
Yeah, accessing services, yeah. Or you know.
To be honest with you, one of the first things I sort of noticed is, you know, they're not aware of services available in their own locality. You've got the Improving Access to Psychological Therapy scheme. Mm. It's in its 11th year, you know, and 12th year, I think, in like Doncaster News, for example. But people don't even know what IAPT is.
Right.
They don't know what the set care model is, what IAPT is. They don't know the difference between primary and secondary care.
Yeah.
So when they talk about mental health, they're thinking psychosis and inpatient.
Mm.
And you know, and where are the services in the community to educate that actually mental health illness doesn't mean that you will definitely be, you know, detained and be placed in an inpatient ward and you need to be psychotic.
Right.
And we have to work with the community to educate them. Mm-hmm. And because they don't have that knowledge, then what we do is we blame it on stigma.
Yeah.
Of course it's going to be stigma because we've not made an effort to educate people.
Mm.
So they'll try to make sense of experiences based on the little knowledge they have and what they might hear of other people, because we know BME people are more likely to be, section, for example, and be in secondary care rather than primary care, so they're overrepresented.
Yeah.
Those are the stories people hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, thank you for bringing up those points. So I know that you mentioned IAPT, and I know that you've worked within IAPT for quite a while, and you've developed a IAPT positive practice guide, haven't you, for clinicians? Can you talk a little bit about how that came about and what you've done?
Yes, an opportunity came up the back end of 2018 mm-hmm. To update the IAPT BAME positive practice guide.
Mm-hmm.
The previous one was written in 2009,
okay.
So in IAPT's early days. So just an opportunity for us to update it. And because myself and the other authors have worked in the IAPT services, mm-hmm. we have experience of some of the challenges and barriers.
Right.
And the guide itself, if you have a read of the guide, it's more around some of the structural issues that we need to consider.
Mm-hmm.
If we are absolutely serious about improving care for BME communities, then we need to be must to, you know, address the structural barriers that prevent people from accessing service, but also from improving and moving in towards recovery. And so the guide, what we did was we consulted 50 BME service users. So these are people who lived the experience of mental health, mm-hmm. mental health services, carers of people with mental health illness as well. So we consulted like doctors and other therapists who have experience of working in IAPT, asylum seekers and refugee groups, and themselves. We did one of the authors, Majid, did the a whole session with Polish people in Polish. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's a session that Michelle did with interpreters, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And my remit was the Black and South Asian community, so Black African and Black African Caribbean communities.
Right.
So it was a very sort of intense 3.5 months, but we managed to produce this guidance. And then, you know, it was scrutinised all the way at the top. So Simon Stevens has had access to it. He signed it off.
Yeah.
So this is a credible piece of work with the voice of the BME community in there that has been heavily scrutinised in NHS England and finally signed off by Simon Stevens. So we're at a position now that we need to be reading it and implementing it.
Right.
And there is a toolkit. There is a toolkit at the back to ensure that there are certain standards that services are meeting. Because this is an active toolkit that services can use.
Right.
But we need commitment from individuals,
mm-hmm.
but also teams and commissioners.
No, definitely.
Implement the guide.
No, that makes sense. So, so why not kind of talk about some of the toolkit, for example, and the importance of it? Because obviously, I'm assuming that this is being put together to help clinicians who deal with diverse clients. So, can you tell me a little bit about like what kind of strategies have been put into place, or what kind of tips and ideas have been given within that toolkit?
Yeah, in the toolkit, the guide itself, we've got some positive practice examples.
Okay.
For example, how to engage with the community. So there's an example of delivering a play.
Okay.
You know, sometimes what you might do is go and deliver like a presentation somewhere, but actually this is more creative ways of engaging people.
Right.
Using local community radio stations, for example, to engage with people. But you know, at the moment, there is a disconnect between the needs of the community and commissioning level.
Right.
And so we've got this guy that we're still holding on to, that really the commissioners need to own it.
Yeah.
Because I shouldn't need to push as much as I'm doing.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So, in terms of like the challenges that as a therapist, I mean, if we kind of think about this on a therapist perspective, because I know you've worked with diverse clients. So what kind of challenges do you face in therapy when you have sort of diverse clients come to you?
Okay. I mean, some of the, I'm in a different place at the minute. I have no time to reflect and think.
Okay.
And you know, one of the challenges I think clinically therapists have is the support of their managers to have the time to find out about their local communities, find out about their culture, find out about their faith, find out, you know, the dynamics of that community. But also, like, in terms of supervision, a lot of supervisors aren't confident when it comes to working with any people.
Okay.
Or the field, they don't feel very confident. If they themselves don't feel confident in working with BME people and then they're supervising, well, actually, what kind of supervision is that then?
Yeah.
What issues are being picked up or not being picked up? So clinically, there's the management side of things, there's the clinical supervision side of things.
Mm.
But also we have to address the lack of translated materials, you know. And I've been talking about it for many years. Not everyone can read and write, regardless of what community you're from. Mm. Even like white communities. I've worked in some communities that are just, you know, white British working class communities.
Mm-hmm.
And there are literacy problems and people don't have access to the internet. So we have to think a bit more broader in terms of inclusion.
Right.
We've got people who can't read and write. Well, written materials is no good to them.
Right.
What we're doing, what we're producing, and we're not producing much, if anything, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So give us the tools and the resources to work and time to work with communities, and that's what's required.
Yeah.
So in terms of clinical skills,
I think
because of all these other structural problems, I think what you might find sometimes is therapists think that there's an inadequacy in them, they're not good enough, they don't have the skills to work with communities, and they do, because clinically, you know, I don't change my clinical skills too much. What I incorporate are issues around racism, discrimination, or try and find out a bit about faith and how the patient might use it in their life and try to bring some of that into my sessions.
Mm.
But the formulations, I don't suddenly create something new based on somebody's skin colour or ethnicity or faith.
Mm.
I try and stick as close as possible to what we've been taught, but then adding them and broadening my thinking around it.
Right.
I think that's what's required a lot of the time.
Right. Okay. So you're saying that the sort of conventional evidence based therapy works, but then it's kind of making those slight adaptations to suit your client.
Absolutely. Right. You know, just before actually you called, I'm just doing a discharge letter of somebody for trauma.
Right.
And I just thought, well, I didn't change the trauma techniques as much. Or maybe I adapted how I delivered it.
Mm.
But actually, it was trauma work. I didn't suddenly think, oh gosh, I can't work with you using my existing skills.
Right.
You know, and therefore now I need to create something different. And this is where the therapeutic relationship is so important, that we give time to that, developing that relationship.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can be missed, especially in IAP services, where there's pressure, for example, to meet targets.
Mm.
And I'm of the opinion that therapists should be allocated time for community outreach work, because IAP is embedded, or should be embedded, in the community.
Yeah. So, like, I know that you mentioned some of the issues around supervision and things like that. So, just kind of thinking about, you know, those who are aspiring to become clinical psychologists and so on, what kind of advice would you give them then? So like, let's say if they are not given the time or space to kind of go and broaden their horizons in terms of different cultures and, you know, the diversity around their local community, what could they do in that circumstance?
Well, I guess what I did is you do it in your own time.
Right.
Because it really does make a difference to your own experience as a clinician and your experience of delivering therapy is that, you know, CPD is part of our, well, it's expected, isn't it, as clinicians, that we will continue to develop skills and knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes what happens is therapists focus more on their practical skills.
Right.
And sometimes what we lose is maybe the relationship side, the relationship building of the theoretical side of things.
Right.
So just go into your local communities, go to community events, have some insight knowledge of local communities. And this is why having a diverse workforce is important.
Yeah.
Because they will have some knowledge that will benefit the team. And doesn't mean that they are then allocated to work with BME people only, which is what's happened.
Right.
Because, you know, for people like myself, I don't just want to work with BME people, I want to work with anybody.
Yeah.
And we need to develop our confidence to work with anybody that works through the door, regardless of what distance we might perceive there to be. And so individually we need to take responsibility, but also be allies. If you know there's a particular group, whether it's BME or LGBTQ groups that are not being represented in your services, then for you to bring up those issues with your team and think about how you can improve access and care for those communities and look at the barriers and try to come up with some solutions. So really being proactive in this approach rather than waiting to be instructed, I think.
Yeah.
And having confidence to be an ally and the support available. And there are obviously some cultural barriers, cultural understanding of mental health problems. For example, people might think they might tend to face healers because it's black magic or evil eye.
Right.
They prioritise that because getting help with mental health in the system might be stigmatised. And as psychological professionals, we must take ownership of that. And so there are some cultural issues that we need to be mindful of.
Right.
But there's also the intergenerational, I guess, challenges. Perhaps the older generation, I wonder, would be harder to access, which is the same for white British communities. But I guess the younger generation who's well born and raised here, they might be more receptive to psychological therapies as we're delivering them.
Right.
So there's a generational difference there. But in terms of that, there is stigma, even so there is stigma.
Yeah.
But, you know, but there's stigma in the white British community as well.
Of course.
But the challenge in my mind is that if we just put a bit of effort into working with the communities, we can help reduce stigma.
Yeah.
And there is a need, I'm sensing there is a need from the community to do more. There's an acknowledgement that no more needs to be done. And what we can't keep doing is placing the blame in the community because they don't have the resources to deal with it because they're left holding other people, and it's really unfair to do that.
Yeah.
Whereas they pay their taxes, so therefore they should expect an equitable service.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean that sounds very important, obviously, and it's a really important issue that needs to be sort of, I think, discussed on a wider scale, I suppose, as well, isn't it? And like you said, I think it can be structural issues within services, and maybe that's something that needs to be thought about more when delivering these sort of evidence-based psychological interventions to diverse communities.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I think that's easy. That will be easier to do once we address these structural issues. Generally, feel like there is, you know, there's knowledge that we could pass on. So I've got perhaps writing that I could be getting on with around how we might adapt therapy and make it more sensitive.
Yeah.
But I don't get time to do that because I'm too busy trying to address some of the structural problems. But if they were dealt with, it would free many of us up, actually, to contribute towards the literature and enhance other therapies.
Of course. So just a last question then. So in terms of then those who are aspiring to go into this profession, what would be your advice for them in terms of dealing with diverse communities?
Well, firstly, I'd like to say good luck. Sometimes I have a love and hate relationship with it. There's aspects of it that I love.
Yeah.
Like I said, discharging this patient that I'm discharging today, it's amazing when you see the journey that they've been on and what's happened and where they're at, and hopefully have some aspirations for the future. And I just, there's a buzz you get out of that, and I don't think anything can replace that for me anyway.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps me motivated and keeps me going as a profession. But then I think well-being is really important in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to, you know, thinking about your long-term health and well-being whilst you're in PAP systems that aren't always inclusive, that aren't always resourced very well, and thinking about getting that balance right for you, but at the same time thinking about how you can contribute to the development of the profession. So in terms of research, it's so important that we have research and literature that's representative. So when you go on to do projects, just look at your sample size and is it representative of the population, and making an effort to do that. And also, like, it is challenging. So, you know, like the clinical psychology, we've had conversations for so long now about the underrepresentation of BME people. So what happens at the shortlisting stages, they're not being shortlisted. And I think that's probably more to do with the fact that they're more likely to come from more deprived areas, and therefore the outcomes, educational outcomes, might be a bit different.
Right.
And the system doesn't seem to recognise that.
Mm.
There's no equity in that criteria. So, but if you do get into the profession, and I really hope whoever's listening, you do, is that please just have an awareness of other people and be an ally and create space for other people who aren't represented. So, you know, I was thinking about the Roma Slovak community. I used to work in that community, and I'm aware of the challenges, but we don't have people from that community in the profession.
Yeah.
Therefore, it becomes our responsibility to be their voice and then hopefully mentor people from that community and support them to develop their themselves and those communities. So, lots of work in progress.
Yeah.
And then don't be shy of progressing into leadership positions.
Mm.
I think I see a lot of competent people who are strong, and they just lack confidence in terms of thinking they're not ready for leadership positions. And I say, you are ready, you learn on the job, because sometimes that's where the change happens, and you're not fighting the system, always getting to those positions, and you can influence change.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. Is anything else that you want to sort of say before we finish off?
Well, during lockdown, have a read of the BME guide on the BABCP website.
Right.
So it's www.babcp.com, and there's a short version of the guide there, and also the long version. But please use it as a tool, like a working document. Mm-hmm. I promise the service users that it wouldn't collect dust, because they've been consulted before for previous similar work and nothing's come of it. And so I said, we'll make sure something comes of this. If you please read the guide, share it with your colleagues, think about how you can use it in your services, and be confident in being an ally. I don't understand everything about every single community, but we can make an effort when somebody's in the room to get to know them. Use community organisations and local sort of faith institutions. Work with them. Okay, when we work together and we co-produce materials, that's half the battle. We're giving people what they need. And also on the BABCP website, there are a series of podcasts that people can access. And there is one on spirituality and mental health. And that was recorded in Glasgow. Not last year, the year before, when I did a session with an Islamic scholar in Glasgow about psychological and spiritual ways of managing stress. And we also had a psychiatrist there who was able to talk about the medical model. So that's what I'd like to share. And then we can hopefully work together and advocate to get more translated materials and resources that we need to enable us to work more effectively.
Definitely.
And give people the care that they rightly deserve.
No, I think what, you know, everything you've said is very important and it's relevant, and I think that it definitely needs to be considered. Thank you so much for joining us, and you know, hopefully we'll get to hear more about your work as well.
Hopefully.
All right.
I look forward to retiring after this project. It's ongoing.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and I'm sure you'll agree Saika's journey has been insightful. She talks very openly and honestly about the challenges and barriers that she's faced as a clinician, but also the challenges service users may encounter when trying to access mental health services. She talks quite a bit about structural inequalities, and I guess this is something that's evident throughout clinical psychology and needs to be tackled face on. So, thank you for listening in. Hopefully we'll meet you again in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.